Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and as always, along with me is Sai Prakash. And today, as we begin to discuss the 13th chapter of Prema Vahini, Bhagwan graciously has sent to the studios Professor Venkatraman. In fact, there cannot be anyone better than him to dilate on what Bhagwan is saying in this chapter, because he is talking about the progress man has made today in terms of his knowledge of what is happening around him and the advances in technology. But this whole process, unfortunately, has not given man the much sought after and elusive element that every person craves for, which is peace. So where has man gone wrong? Where should he look for peace? Well, these are some of the aspects we will request Professor Venkatraman to discuss with us today in this last session of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai. A warm welcome to you, sir, to Vahini Satsang, and it's really so heartening to have you in the studios, because a few months ago when I was in Malaysia, so many devotees there asked me, when will sir resume the talks on Radio Sai? And I told them how busy you are with the archives, how desperately the archives needs you, and how desperately the world needs the archives. And it's really gratitude to Bhagwan that you could make time and come. This is quite late in the evening, but thank you so much for taking the trouble and coming to the studio, sir.
Thank you for inviting me.
So as we do
a few nice things, I don't pay for it.
And as we do in every episode of this program, so we will play now the first segment of chapter 13, and then you could share your reflections, please.
Lokamuna manavulu enniyo vidyalu chadiviri kada, enniyo yantramulu srushtinchiri kada, entayo gnanaabhivruddhi pondiri kada. Ainappatikini kuduravalasina manashanti enduku kudiradayenu? Emiti vinta? Nanaatikini natteta kottukoni poyi shantiki duranga potunnare? Enduku ee vidyalu మాయ విద్యలు? ఈ యంత్రములు పొట్టకోటి యంత్రములు. జ్ఞానము మిథ్యాజ్ఞానము. ప్రపంచ రహస్యమును కనుగొనుటకు ఇది కాదు మార్గం. ఏ రహస్యమును కనుగొనినా అన్ని రహస్యములు తెలియునో? ఏ చిక్కు ఊడినా అన్ని చిక్కులు ఊడునో? ఏ విద్య నేర్చినా అన్ని విద్యలునూ సిద్ధించునో? అది ఒకటే ఉన్నది. చెట్టును కొట్టదలచినవారు తల్లివేరు తెగవేయవలెను కాని ఆకులు తీసివేయనారంభించిన ఎంతకాలమని? పోని అంతయూ తీసివేసినను ఏమి లాభం? అట్టి మూలాధారమైనదేదో వేదఋషులు కనిపెట్టియే ఉన్నారు. అట్టి వేదఋషులు మనవారైనను మనవారని చెప్పుకొనుటకు కూడా ఈనాడు భారతీయులు సిగ్గుపడుతున్నారు.
ఇన్ ద వరల్డ్ టుడే, doesn't man learn about several subjects? Hasn't man invented many machines? Hasn't he progressed in such knowledge? In spite of all this, why hasn't man secured the expected mental peace? Isn't this a matter of surprise? Day by day, man is actually swept away from peace. Why? All this learning is delusory knowledge. All these machines will help only in securing livelihood. This is false knowledge. It will not help one understand the secrets of creation. There is only one principle, understanding that secret unravels all other secrets. Solving that puzzle solves all other puzzles. Learning that knowledge enables you to learn everything else. If one wants to fell a tree, instead of plucking its leaves out, one has to remove its tap root. Even if you decide to pluck the leaves out, how long can you do it? It is all of no use. Similarly, our sages and saints have identified for us the essence of all knowledge. Today, Bharatiyas feel it would demean their self-esteem to associate themselves with such sages and saints, even though they belong to us.
So that is what Bhagwan is starting the chapter 13 with. As I ruminate on it, there are three points that actually come to my mind. Firstly, Swami is saying that man is in the pursuit of various forms of knowledge, and all that is useful, but only to a limited extent. It helps man to earn his bread and so on, but if one wants peace, then one has to turn to the mother of all knowledge, which is Atmavidya. And the second point which follows is, material pursuits cannot give you spiritual reward, and peace is a spiritual reward. And finally, Swami says, our sages and saints, they had discovered where to look for to get the spiritual reward, namely peace. So, sir, if you can share whatever occurs to you from what Bhagwan has written.
Well, you put me in a spot because I'm coming with about a short notice. However, the problems and questions you have raised are not new. What is important is these problems have suddenly begun to accelerate and grow to alarming proportions. Now, we have to set this in context. So first thing I would say is, who are we? This is a question Swami has raised in many of his discourses. And for practical purposes, I would say we are a composite of three entities. The body, which belongs to the gross world. And top is the Atma, which belongs to that which is even beyond the ethereal. And in between comes the mind, which belongs to the subtle world. Now all the problems that you raised are problems that deal with humans and are problems which have been created by humans. This if you keep in mind, then many things will fall into place. Now over a period of time, if you go to early human history, it was a question of survival. And Indian climate was far better than the very hostile climates in many other parts of the world. In Europe, for example, I'm talking of several thousand years ago.
Yes.
Because of the cold.
Correct.
Survival against physical problems.
Yes.
Dominated their thinking. Here, it was different. And as a result, people could think a little bit about other problems, other matters.
Yes.
And they went through the early stage where they ascribed forces of nature to supernatural beings. And then it slowly graduated through the Vedic period to the Vedantic period and so on. So they began to realize that the thinking they had been doing up to then came out of the mind. And the mind is now beginning to ask at times. They didn't have all your cell phones and other WhatsApp, what's done, why don't you know what to distract them, thank God. And so Now, I think thanks to the cell phone, what's far, I think, God is far. Okay. So, they began to ask, where does it come from? In a way, in Bhagavatam, there is a story where the locals are, you know, doing some yajna or so on. And Krishna says, why are you doing this? We are doing it for Varna or something. Oh, is there anyone above Varna? And say, you kid, you shut up. What do you know?
Mm.
And the Govardhan story was there.
Yes.
A story is there to show there is someone far beyond. That was some sort of a hint. And the Vedic seers found that they could not contact that, go to that level by mere thinking.
Mm.
What is that? Yato vacho nivartante apraapyamasa. It's beyond words and beyond the mind.
Correct.
So they had to somehow go to that. And the way they did was, they sort of put the mind in resonance with the Atma. Atma is also inside. So they functioned as a joint account, and there could be energy transfer. It worked well. But as so-called developments began to take place, two things happened. One is population grew. Straight away there was some room for conflict. And ever since Renaissance, knowledge began to grow about the outside world. We could see with telescopes and so on. Until the Industrial Revolution in the early part of the 19th century. And as if that was not enough, around 1980s, there was really a convergence of many factors like satellite technology, fiber optic technology and so on, which allowed for communications everywhere. So these are the glittering toys of the modern age. And they successfully distracted everybody because there was the market force. So there was a combination of all the gods of the marketplace. And the mind. Mind is very powerful. The Gita, Krishna says, the power of the mind comes from me.
Yes.
In animals, there's no mind, there's only brain. But you're something different. So, if you get disconnected from the moral compass in today's world, there is going to be a problem. And what Swami is trying to tell you is, how much are you going to spend, how long are you going to spend time on these gadgets? They are going to drown you. Even if you don't believe in God and all that, there are these oscillations. Today you are rich. Tomorrow you are nowhere. Today you are sitting in a gadi. Tomorrow you are nobody. I am more or less experiencing that when I was here. So I could at least threaten you by way of being a boss. Now you have avoided that fear. You don't even come near. Okay. I am taking out on you guys. Okay. So, what Swami says, this is a material world. Why are you applying your mind to it and getting distracted? Don't you have the strength to push that away and think about what is there elsewhere? One of the things that has happened, this is sort of mentioned in the last part of the clip you played.
Yes.
It has come to a stage where we have adopted the standards of the Western world and are distancing ourselves from our ancient knowledge. Knowledge which our ancients gave, to put it bluntly.
Yes.
People are ashamed to talk about God. They say, I have no time for it.
Swami is saying they are ashamed to even associate themselves with sages and saints.
Let alone sages and saints. They are not willing to say, I am a devotee of Sai Baba. Saints, who knows saints? We only read about them. You call him avatar when convenient. But the moment you cross the Ganesha gate, the avatar switches off. The WhatsApp switches off. In fact, now they do it in insight. So, what is it you are going to take with you? It is not only that. If you go for the higher knowledge, the basis of higher knowledge is, there is only one. and everything is a manifestation of that. Of course, I can't say everything is one at the practical level. I can't go and put my finger in the electric plug and say, you and I are one. You don't do things like that. So you need all these things in the world. You must know if the roof leaks, what to do with it. If there is a fire, how to extinguish it. Nobody says you don't need. But there must be something which you aim at. In the Western world, the moment you abolish God, you become nothing. Death is what they call a full stop. And a life, how did it come? Nobody knows. We don't care. While we are here, we have a ball, enjoy. That takes away the soul of the person. Because even a noted atheist like Richard Dawkins says, I have a soul and I have to feed food to my soul. I must listen to Beethoven. I must see Shakespeare dramas. No, the fellow who denies God says he has a soul when it's convenient. So there is an aspect, and that aspect comes from the other side. From the atmic nature that is inbuilt to it. And in the situation in which the world is, if we ignore the Atma, we are doing it at our own cost. So, and this country has been in the forefront.
Yes.
Do you want to desert your own traditions and wear the cloak of somebody else? Why don't you boldly recognize our greatness in this area and try to follow it? I will later on, when the discussion develops and you ask questions, try to say what Swami has said should be the destiny of this country.
Hmm.
Okay.
Sir, as you...
Sorry, I took a little long. Now I won't.
No, sir. It is wonderful.
We want to listen to you.
Yes, absolutely.
Just one question which comes up is... when Swami is talking about advances in knowledge and how people have grown, and he says, but people have not attained peace of mind.
Yes.
So in a sense, what would you define peace of mind as? Like if someone were to attain peace of mind, what would be his or her state? Like how will it reflect in daily life?
Okay. Right in front of me is this microphone.
Right.
Does it ever get disturbed? Unless I go take a stone and break it. It doesn't have a mind.
Correct.
But then you and I have a mind. So, can we retune that mind to some other wavelength as compared to the wavelength it is on?
Okay.
It is switched on to one radio station. I don't like this. I switch on to another station. I may like what that is broadcasting. I like that because my heart is in tune with that, and the mind follows the heart and it is at peace. I don't know whether you know it. There are all types of rings Swami has given, but his standard products towards the end were Navaratnas.
Right.
They were all followed. Then for some he will give a green sapphire ring. For some he will give diamond ring.
Yes.
I got a diamond ring. I explained. For those to whom I give the green ring to those who are full of anger. They have to cut down their anger.
Oh. Okay.
And I give diamond rings to those who should make their mind die. Okay. Die mind.
Wow.
So this was it. So the point is, if you don't put brakes on the mind,
mm-hmm.
It is like giving the keys of a Ferrari, a brand new red Ferrari, to a teenager, and make sure you take out the brakes from the Ferrari. Then in Saraswati, when he came, he said that. I found out two actually photos in the net.
Mm-hmm.
Red Ferrari, and then it's all broken in pieces. So that's what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
The mind is running away without any brakes. It will accelerate and crash. So, what he's saying is, did I create you for this purpose? You are very special, jantunam narjanmam. And if you follow the path I give you, forget about peace and all that. It's not some alternate remedy or what you call Ayurveda instead of allopathy. You will come to me. You and I are one. I cannot be without you, and you cannot be without me. So having put you here, I wanted to come back. That is, once you come back to me, you will be in a state of bliss. The peace, in the sense we talk about, will become irrelevant and
correct.
Meaningless.
Correct.
See, this is the world of opposite. Opposite of peace is conflict. Opposite of joy is what you call pain. Pleasure and pain, all sorts of... This is the world of duality. I have put you in the world of duality, better come out from here to there. Then, what is peace? You don't know what is peace. I don't know whether you know it. Swami said it in a discourse. One lady came to Swami and said, "Swami, my husband died." Swami said, "Chala santosha." He said, "What do you mean? I'm telling you my husband died. You are saying chala santosha. If I were there, I would have made a mischievous remark. But instead of that, Swami, I am always happy. I am always in the state of ananda. I don't know how to be unhappy." Swami has often said that Krishna said similar things. So, our destiny is to go back to God. And all the other things are what you call procedures, protocol. Do you go to Vodafone or Airtel? There are different means of going there. But coming back to me is the most important thing. And once we forget that, not only will we personally feel the loss of peace and all that, we can create a lot of problems in the world. That is the most important thing. I don't know whether you get the hint of...
Definitely, sir. Well, then it also raises the other question. If this sort of identification with our true self is vital and it is very important, then when Swami says that even Indians are not able to associate, not feeling like associating with the ancient and this ancient wisdom, why is it that there has been this change? What is fascinating us with the Western culture, if I may call it so?
See, we call it Western culture because it came from there.
Right.
But actually, long before Western culture, there were distractions.
Okay.
See, distraction, marketing distraction becomes an industry. That's it. So, there are two targets. You target the body, but you do it via the mind. Because body, I can't advertise to the body. I have to advertise to you, and you tell the body, "Look, I want to drink." But the target is the body. This food is very good. It will reduce 50 pounds in 5 days. It's a lot of baloney. By eating more food. I mean, this is ridiculous. They send you all things. You can eat ice cream without getting fat. Which guy believes? But we have become so stupid, we buy that. So, the other thing is slightly higher. You entice the mind and make it do things that will give control of the mind, control over people to the mind, in various ways.
Okay.
See, I buy property, then I feel I'm great. I own you. You have to do what I say.
Okay.
Many people go to politics to serve, but other people go to say, there it's not a question of wealth. Even if you have a lot of money, the control I hold.
Power, yes.
I can make you dance to my tunes. So that is more dangerous because one man can affect a lot. The classic example is Hitler.
Correct.
I mean, he controlled the destiny of so many people. It led to the Second World War in which 50 million people died. So that is what is dangerous. Rakshasam, that's what Rakshasam is. And they are very clever. So that is why you see in the Puranas, the Hiranyakashipu asks for a boon, thinking he's very clever. And he leaves out the vulnerable spot for Narayana to come and attack him. Same with Ravana.
Correct.
So, that is the fallacy. You are deluded by your own mind so that you get destroyed.
In fact, as you are mentioning this, something very beautiful comes to mind. One of those days, I just happened to see a video of one of the Trai sessions. And Swami is explaining, "I am not speaking to you all. I am speaking to your minds." He says, I'm not speaking to your bodies. And when I say be steady, it's not your bodies I'm looking at. Your body can be steady, but your mind can be roaming all over the place in the marketplace. So when I'm speaking, I'm addressing the mind.
Swami, my mind is busy tweeting.
So I think...
I don't know what tweet is. I heard it a lot. Or Facebook. What do you call it? Instagram. Snapchat. I've heard all the words.
Everything is snapping away at man, actually.
No, but what is happening is, we have not only got addicted, we have sort of become or supporters of the concept. I don't even say that it's bad. See, supposing I become a drunkard, I now say, it's good, man, it's good for you. That it has gone to that level.
Correct.
You don't know what you're missing. That is what is dangerous.
Absolutely. I think we'll move on to the next segment, sir, if you permit.
పూర్వ పురుషులు భగవత్ సందర్శనమును పొంది అనుగ్రహ ప్రభావంతో తపస్సామర్థ్యముతో ఆధ్యాత్మిక విద్యను కనిపెట్టి బోధించిరి. ఇట్టి విద్యలను ఇతర దేశస్థులైన ఎంతోమంది తత్వవేత్తలు శోధించి ఈ రీతిగా వ్రాసిరి. ఐహికాముష్మిక సాధన సంపత్తిలో హిందూదేశం ఇతరులకు మార్గదర్శిగా ఉన్నది. సూచితిరా పై విషయము, దీపము ఇల్లంతా వ్యాపించి ప్రకాశించుచున్నది. దీపస్తంభం క్రిందనేయుండు భారతీయులకు క్రీనిడ ప్రారంభమేనా? ముందు తాతముత్తాతలు స్నాన సంధ్యాదులు నర్చుకుని పవిత్రంగా కూర్చుని ఉపనిషత్తులు వేదాలు పఠించడి వాడుక కలవారు. అది ఏగాక వాటిని వ్రాసిన ఎడల కూడా పుణ్యమనియు వాటిని జ్ఞప్త్యందుంచుకునిడివారు. తమ తరువాత వారు వాటిని దేవతార్చనపు పీఠముపైనుంచి పూజించినారని వినియయుందురు. అట్టి పవిత్ర గ్రంథాలను ఇప్పటి మనవారు కొందరు గమనించక ఎలుకలు కొట్టి బూజుపట్టిన అట్టి తుక్కులే మన దిక్కని తలంచక పారవేయుచున్నారు.
The sages of yore, having had the vision of the divine, by securing his grace and bolstered by the strength of their penance, unraveled the knowledge of the spirit and then shared this wisdom. Many seekers from overseas who have inquired into this wisdom have this to say, quote, "For all the nations, the Hindu nation shows the path for the pursuit of wealth, whether for this world or the other," unquote. Did you notice this statement? The lamp is shedding light in the entire house. However, is it the destiny of Bharatiyas to be in the shadow under the lamppost? Earlier, our forefathers, after offering ritualistic prayers in the morning, would take to the study of the Vedas and Upanishads in a pure environment. Besides this, they used to memorize these and pen them down, thinking of it as a meritorious act. You might have heard how the succeeding generations placed these texts on the altar and offered worship. Unfortunately, some people in today's times, without realizing the preciousness of these texts, don't care even if these are destroyed into bits and pieces by rats or cobwebs and recklessly dispose them.
So I think it just continues from where we left off in the first segment. And Bhagavan is saying how Bharat has been the treasure trove of this knowledge of the spirit, and how the current generation unfortunately is not only paying little attention to it, but in ignorance is actually disregarding it. Isn't it, sir?
Yeah, that is all right. That's only an observation.
Yeah.
That is your point.
Yeah. So, I think when I think about the sages and saints of yore and the knowledge of gained in the current times, one thing that comes to my mind is, which is also sort of reflected in the first segment, the scientists of today spend a lot of time, energy, building this huge laboratory. So you have billions of dollars spent and you have a fantastic, spectacular experiments done in this huge scientific laboratories. But our sages and saints, they spent billions of hours just going within. And they were able to get those secrets. I mean, it is experimentation versus intuition. They were able to get all those, knowledge.
It is not intuition.
It is communion with the divine?
No, anyway, whatever, what's your point?
Yeah, so here what Bhagavan, one thing that occurs to me is, Bhagavan is saying here how today man is seeking this knowledge outside, but all this knowledge was there without sages and saints. And the current generation has no clue about that, and that's why they disregard that.
Okay. You have any point on that? Because I want to give a comprehensive answer to that.
Yes, sir. Taking, the hint from what you had said previously, you had mentioned that in India, things were more settled down in terms of lifestyle and in terms of problems.
No, basically, the weather was
weather, and so that was more conducive for introspection, and it was more conducive for people to go within and spend time on contemplation, and that's how they were able to gain this secret knowledge. But
the thing is,
yes,
they did not occupy their time with trivialities.
Absolutely.
The tribals remained as tribals. Here they asked questions. There was a thirst for knowledge. And they came up to a point. Then they came to a bottleneck. So we have given portfolios to all ministers. Indira, you do this. Chandra, you do this. You do this. And all that. Now where is the boss? Is there a boss? If so, what is his nature? That is where they broke the barrier. And then there is something beyond all this, from which we came, but we don't know what it is.
There's also another point.
And they said we will experience it. Yes, go ahead.
Just to interrupt, I thought there was also this very important element of division of labor, in a sense, in society. Because unless the pursuit of excellence is given importance in a society, and it's regarded in high regard. Otherwise, they won't have support. Like, for example, if the Brahmins and the sages were meant to contemplate and worship and find the secret, spiritual truths, they should be supported by somebody else.
That is a point, but yes. I can deal with that without bringing in humans and excellence and all that.
Okay.
First of all, there is a lot of what you call war against science. Now, if you really believe we should do like the ancients, first thing is we have to wind up radio Sai.
Okay. No, that's true, correct.
I mean, I don't want Hyde Park comments.
Correct.
This is a different age, and we have to live somewhat differently. Even Gandhi after a lot of...
I think we are not...
No, wait a minute. Let us not get into that argument.
Yeah.
We have come this far, and let us not trash science. Without science, you would not have cancer, right? Drugs and all that.
Yes, correct. It's only a thing of appreciating what was there in the past.
There is no way... The times have changed. You cannot do this. But there are ways of what I call drawing attention to this.
Yes.
And I will illustrate it by considering a very frightening issue, which is in fact right now exercising the minds of many people, the confrontation between the United States and North Korea with the possibility of a nuclear war. I have lived through the Cuban crisis, missile crisis in 1963, when it was a very different kind of crisis. There was America at one end, on one side, and USSR on the other side. They had missiles with hydrogen bombs. These people had. You go and read about the Cuban missile crashes. In fact, I used to see the newspapers every morning. It was frightening in going to that. Luckily, the war was averted because the world would have been destroyed. Okay, I will have more to say. Because what was the reason for the crisis?
Mm-hmm.
It goes to the subject of fear.
Yes.
They'll come to that. In 1968, when Swami went to Bombay, he was invited to the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, which is in Chowpatty. K. M. Munshi was the Kulapati, the Chancellor or something. They used to bring a Bhavan's journal.
Journal, yes.
I have seen that in the old days. And Swami was asked to give a talk. And they had what you call various scholars and all that. So there is a Q&A session. And somebody asked a question. Swami, what should India's policy be? Should it go nuclear or not?
Mm-hmm.
Because the Chinese were there. They had already got the hydrogen bomb and so on and so forth. And there was America. Here was India talking of Panchsheel and stuff like that. That looked like irrelevant nonsense.
Mm.
Okay? That is a valid point. What do you do? I mean, to fight the Mahabharata war, Arjuna went to Shiva and got on the...
yes, Pashupat Astra.
There was no Amazon, otherwise he would have got it. Okay, he had to personally go and bring it. Okay, so these things are a fact of life. And Swami did not answer that question directly. This is one of the most important statements by Swami that has stuck in my mind for the simple reason it is a direct reference to nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And I've lived in that world because of my past. Not that I had anything to do with weapons, but nuclear energy could be used for peace via reactors and for bomb.
Yes.
And this was a genuine matter for India in terms of survival. And Swami said, among the Pandavas, Bhima was a tough guy.
Mm.
He could beat up anybody with bare hands and tear him apart. Arjuna was intelligent and he was a very skilled warrior, archer and all. But both of them bowed to Yudhishthira,
yes.
Dharmaputra. Dharmaputra was not good in anything except gambling. Okay. And that too poor. Poor gambler. But luckily Swami did not say that. I hope you will forgive me for saying that. No, I admire the Yudhishthira quite a lot, especially when it comes to Mahabharata, Yaksha Pariksha,
yes,
and all that. But what he said was, he had the moral authority of Dharma.
Mm.
So power bowed down to him,
mm-hmm,
skill bowed down to him, and then comes the punchline. In the Committee of Nations, Bhima is Russia, brute force.
Yes.
Arjuna is America. India should be the moral leader of the world, and they will bow to India. In a way, some later events bear testimony to this. Now, that was 1968. The Cold War kept on becoming a tense tension. And there was what you call an even balance where nuclear weapons were concerned between America and Russia. Not many people know that in 1983 or so, when Ronald Reagan, after blasting Russia and all that, finally met Gorbachev and they made Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, trash ban, decreasing. They brought the nuclear weapons inventory from about 30,000 nuclear weapons on each side to 3,000. Something like that.
It's quite a bit.
No, it is not 3,000. Yeah, no, it was about 3,000. And even 3,000 was too much because the smallest hydrogen bomb was 50 times the power of Hiroshima.
Oh my goodness.
Okay.
Mm.
And then after some more recent things, it has come to 1,500. Now, they were balanced. Both sides were afraid of the other. So fear, the fear comes in the mind. When you become afraid, you do things to protect yourself. So if you don't want the weapons, what is the obvious thing? Try to get rid of fear. And FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was the president of America after the Great Depression, really brought up America to a very high prosperous level, and who died in 1945. I remember I was in Karachi. The news was he died of cerebral thrombosis. I didn't know what it was, but they explained. Blood vessel burst in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Mm. Oh.
Beautiful statement, but nobody knows how to get rid of fear. So to get rid of fear, you must go beyond the mind. And now we are unnecessarily trying to die of fear about the nuclear war. All sorts of things are being said right now.
Yes.
But now India has also got such weapons for its own rational reasons, and there's a big dilemma. Some years ago, when Rajiv Gandhi was the Prime Minister, every Prime Minister goes to the United Nations every year, there's a General Assembly. He made a speech. He said, we are coming here and pledging that we will give up all nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Provided all the others do it.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are what is called the permanent members of the Security Council. USSR, now Russia, England, France, and China. So they said, we will keep our nuclear weapons, you give up everything. So it's one rule for me and another rule. Father says to son, see, I've got all the bad habits, but you be a saint. It's not good for you. I mean, who will accept that? So we have come to this kind of a ridiculous situation where we have become slave to some kind of a fear or the other. Some people are afraid of death. Some people, I've got all this property, will I lose it tomorrow? Mm. I've started this venture, will somebody else invent something else and I go out? So this is happening. This is what they call creative destruction. And it happens in technology all the time. So why do we have to have too much of this? For example, there is one moral issue right now which I will mention, and so that you can take to the next point. Till now, we were afraid somebody else will take my job.
Mm-hmm.
Now, machines have come to a stage, thanks to AI, they may take our jobs, and we'll feel without a soul. Car says, I will drive myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, this question was raised by Gandhiji himself. When it comes to a stage where machines rob man of his purpose in life, then I am against machines. First he was against all machines, then he realized he cannot address the public without a loudspeaker, so he made he could not travel without a train, so here. But he said, thus far and no further. So, do we pay attention to that? Everybody says, you buy this, technology will solve problems. I see all that. Technology doesn't solve problems. As somebody said, mind is very good at doing things which does not involve itself. Problem from outside, mind will handle very well. Smallpox. Man said, abolish smallpox. Mind did it.
Hmm.
Moon. Man said, oh, mind, give me a way of going to the moon. It did it.
Hmm.
Man says, mind, I'm angry. You find a way of getting rid of anger. So he says, you drink, you lose it. Then after a while he said, I don't have any drinks. Modi government has banned prohibition and all. So I'm sorry, I should not talk about politics, but we have had prohibition from very early days. This is nothing new.
Hmm.
So why don't we just pause and ask ourselves, what is it that we want? Why do we want more of everything? In the old days, the shirts were so good. They eldest brother or sister would give it to the younger people. The young fellow will never get a new dress. So that was the trouble with them. Now these things don't last long. So there is this new entire culture. So have we not gone far enough to say, enough is enough? What do we do with my life and time? Do we have time for that? No.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not talking about that. Do we have time at your watch, to think right? about such things?
Mm.
Everybody is busy trying to talk to others to arrange the next meeting. You go from one meeting to another. So this line is busy, that line is busy. Nobody picks up the phone, at least in my case. Maybe they have deleted me from all their... But why? We don't have time even to chant one Gayatri once in a day. Gayatri, what is it? I've forgotten. Can you tell me, man? Okay. I put it in my cell phone. Fellows give speeches from cell phone. I'm sorry. I've never seen that before. That is invention. Is this what you have to invent?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would like people to say, at the end of it all, what? At the end of it all, what? That is soul. What am I here for? And today I was hearing yesterday, the story of Kuchela and Krishna. He says, what is beautiful is, God comes to the devotee.
Yes.
That is very rare. That is exceptional. God says, I will come to you.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a Maharashtrian story, Janabai and all. She was asked to grind corn whole night. She was singing bhajan. Krishna comes and says, move. I'll grind corn, you sing for me. I mean, these may be stories. But there is the resonance of us with something far beyond us that transcends the senses. If you take that away, man thinks he can abolish God by writing some articles and nasty articles and blogs or whatever it is. Then what are you left with? Is that all there is to it? Maybe there are a few minutes somebody wants to say something. No, that is what I want to say. This purpose of, you know, other knowledge and all that, what you see is worldly knowledge, it is led to, on account of fear, something which is deadly. Actually, I don't need nuclear weapons. I can do it with biological weapons. But one man said, the greatest weapon of mass destruction is poverty.
Hmm.
If you have 100 million people poor, that is a very dangerous bomb. And in India, 1/3 of the world's poor live in India. If you take the whole of the world, China to South America, Africa thrown in, 1/3 of all the poor people live in India. And this is the land that gave the Bhagavad Gita, etc., etc. Should that happen here? Why is there so much inequality? Who is going to think about it? I don't think about it till I lose everything. Then I say, where is this?
Hmm.
Those are things. So, this is the way of making that the other knowledge relevant to today's society.
Correct.
There is no avatar who has built hospitals. There is no avatar who has done drinking water projects. They are needed in this Kali Yuga. So Swami said, I'll be born in a poor family. I will not have education because I don't need that education to be compassionate. It's not there in any syllabus. Okay?
Right.
And he did it. We don't talk about it that way. Swami came, he did water project. Swami said, nothing of the sort. He said, by willpower, I'll make this place a much better place. In fact, in that 1965 discourse, he says, 65th birthday, not 1990. People said, Swami, you can't build it here, it's nobody. He says, unless I build it in a village, poor people will not get anything. If they go to the towns, they don't even give them color water.
Water.
Color nil
and
everything.
And today, thanks to that, you have dentists outside, massage wallas there, orthopedics are there, all sorts of fellows are there. So, this is the way it grows.
Wow. In fact, as you're talking about the hospital, I just remembered some time back I was talking to Mr. Jayant Bose, who is the son of Brigadier Bose, who was involved in the construction of the hospital. And so he was saying that after he took over, when he looked at all the drawings and all the stipulations that Swami had placed for building the hospital, he went to Swami and said, Swami, the flooring of the hospital, it need not be, you know, that granite stone and all that. That we can make it, you know, normal. We need not spend so much. And anyway, the people who are going to come will be of weaker sections of society. So why don't we save costs on that? And Swami said, I want that every person who comes to the hospital, especially people of weaker sections, they should feel that they are stepping into a palace. They have to get that experience.
What is more important is, at the time, he had bodily problems. He was said, Swami will take you here and there. Said, I am going to my hospital. If it is good for that fellow, it is good for me. That was a conscious, deliberate suggestion, because lot of efforts were made to take him by air ambulance to place X and all that. He said no. And so there was a principle, integrity, concern for others. That is what our culture is known for. That is gone now. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
So we can't talk about rishis. What is the essence of what Rishi said? How does it operate on today's world? That is my point. Otherwise, we have no business.
Yes. As you always talk about bringing together knowledge and compassion. That is what is the essence.
See, the point is, as Weisskopf, whom you are quoting, said, compassion without knowledge is ineffective. If a farmer is compassionate, what can he do? He can give water to two people or something like that. But knowledge without compassion is inhuman.
Yes.
Knowledge without compassion can lead to all kinds of exploitation. So that bishop said, poverty is enough to kill you. You don't need bombs.
Okay. Yes.
So how many people realize that? What Swami said was, you need both. Compassion comes from the heart, knowledge comes from the mind. Let them join together. I mean, this is like a zip. You can't have a one-sided zip, whether it's the left zip or the right zip. You need both. Just as you cannot have a DNA without two strands.
Yes.
Okay, temporarily you can take it up, bring in messenger RNA and all that. At the end of the day, you need a DNA. They must mesh here.
Correct.
Huh? Will you buy a zip coat with only
one side? That's a beautiful example. Mm.
No, that's it. Mm. So he said secular and all this business is a line you are drawing.
Yes.
If you go fly in as a spacecraft, you don't see any boundaries.
Yes.
You don't see any boundary between Canada and United States. Somewhere there are rivers, so they make a boundary where there are rivers. So this side of the river is one country. Those are natural boundaries. If rivers change the course, then those problems arise. Mm. So the birds don't have any boundaries, snakes don't have any boundaries, rats don't have any boundaries. So it is we who draw a boundary. Sometimes it is necessary for practical purposes. But at a certain level, you and I are one.
Yes.
And if I change my life to that angle, first thing I will do is stop complaining about others. Don't talk about what that fellow is. Why don't you bother about what you can do? Those are important questions.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, sir. I think we have now discussed the first two segments of chapter 13, and I request, if you can join us in the subsequent segments as we discuss the chapter 13, it would be really a blessing to have you for this Prema Vahini Satsang.
There was a famous politician who was very silent, never said anything. If you went to him with anything, he will say, Parkalam. That means, let us see.
Yeah, let us pray and see what the one has in store.
I have no difficulty at this time.
Oh, wonderful, sir.
Except that right now I am going through a lot of work-related pressures, the tensions.
Yes.
And everything has to be done. And once that is over, I am eagerly looking forward to birthday, not because it's Swami's birthday, because I have been promised moksha on that day.
You'll have more time for radio, sir.
That's what I think.
Wonderful, sir.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much, sir. So, dear listeners, with that, it's time to wind up this day-long Thursday Live. Thank you so much for being with us all through the day. Today, if you were listening to our programs, you might have heard new signature tunes that we had for all the segments of Thursday Live. So we are in the process of giving a complete musical makeover to Radio Sai. So please do send us your feedback about what you feel about what you heard today. Is it fresh? Is it interesting? Would you like something different? Because we are going to continuously work on it in the next few weeks, so that by birthday we have Radio Sai sounding very different, very fresh. That would be our offering to Bhagwan, apart from something else also which is planned, which we'll reveal to you in the weeks to come. So thank you so much for being with us, and as always you can write to us. Our email is listener@radiosai.org. Let us keep our focus on Him, so that we feel Him in every pore of our being, and He guides us in our every thought, word and deed. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.
See.